oh, that my words were recorded, that they were written on a scroll, that they were inscribed with an iron tool on lead or engraved in rock forever. I know that my Redeemer lives and that in the end he will stand on the earth.
This week we continue our series on hope. Inspired by the art in the garage, metaphors of this creative installation guide our reflection. Upon first glance, when visiting the garage in the evening, you find the blue glow emanating through the garage doors, illuminating the pinwheels inside. The scene has great depth as the candles add fields of light around the motion of the turning paper. Now, between the pinwheels and the final dark background, there is a series of strings hanging from the ceiling, gentle blue yarn carrying the hopes of our community. Gently twirling at seemingly random intervals are little cards with hopes written upon them. Some of the cards have colorful pictures. Others, a few words jotted in the simple blue ink of a ballpoint pen. Whatever their presentation, they are the honest hopes of members of the congregation and community, and you can add yours. Blank cards await you in the little box attached to the garage. We continue to add more and more hope to this project, and yours is a welcome addition. In fact, that sentiment that your hope is desired and would help complete something bigger is where our art encounters the scriptures and encourages the message today. Our hope can be nurtured and encouraged by the hope of others. Hope builds hope. Over the last year, we have all had to confront issues of isolation. We have been separated from what used to be parts of our daily lives, be that coworkers, classmates, going to stores, hanging out with neighbors or friends, worshiping together, and sharing fellowship together as a congregation. These things don't happen the same way right now. And the effects are multifaceted. In some cases, it encouraged new ways of connecting, like our Wednesday Joys and Concerns time. You hear me mention this often in the announcements, and I cannot tell you strongly enough. Please join us on Zoom for 30 minutes on Wednesdays. It is an incredible time. You don't have to share anything if you don't want to. It's about being together and listening as much as it is speaking. The connections that happen there remind me of all the best parts of being in person. Now, while opportunities such as Joys and Concerns time have been intentional responses to mitigate the separation, the virtual responses cannot replace being together. In the last week, there have been no less than at least one moment every day, sometimes so many more, when I find myself pausing to sigh as I lament how different things are right now. I miss being together. I miss the physical presence, the feel of a room filled with people, and that's why I need the hope of returning together. I need the hope because I feel the sadness. There are moments when I can envision our return, when the possibilities of outdoor gatherings in the near future give me a spring in my step. And there are times that even knowing the optimistic data trends, they still don't bring me to a place of full belief that it's just around the corner. It's been a long haul these last 10 months, and at times it has felt like everything is falling apart. The tough days echo the lament of the psalmists, "How long, O Lord?" Then those tough days turn into tough weeks, and they echo the frustration of the Book of Lamentations. "This is why I weep, and my eyes overflow with tears. There is no one who can comfort me, no one to restore my spirit." The long months start to feel like the writings of exile, how we long to return to what used to be, even though it was imperfect. And mixed throughouts, there have been moments where my biblical brain turns to Job. I always hesitate to open the Bible to Job, as it is a book of extremes. It seems hyperbolic to compare the experiences of my overly comfortable life to the suffering of Job. But it was written for that very reason, to give us an extreme contrast. Job is a book in our Bible that was written as a story. There was not a man named Job. God didn't actively create his suffering, and the original audience reading it knew this. They knew it was a story. It was an allegory, a tall tale to bring about transformation. Now, if in your life someone told you that Job was a true story that actually happened, I apologize that literalism was used in such an unhelpful way. In the book of Job, everything is taken from him. His wealth, his loved ones, his possessions, all gone. He ends up sitting on a pile of ashes, scraping sores on his arms with broken pieces of glass. The bulk of the book is Job trying to figure out why it happened and how he should respond. What we know as a reader is that he will never be able to understand why. There is no rational reason. And as he ponders life and struggle and how to respond, he encounters three of his friends. These friends, though I hesitate to really call them that, show up with all sorts of input. They show up trying to offer answers to him, answers that are not theirs to give. They are sure it's Job's fault that he did something wrong and his circumstances are a punishment. They push all sorts of ideas and explanations. They offer blame and shame. They pile on guilt and grief. Job is surrounded by the opposite of hope. The one family member who did not die, his wife, her offer to him is curse God and die. About halfway through the entire ordeal, we find Job still holding on to the promise of a God that will meet him in his misery and bring him redemption. I know that my Redeemer lives, and in the end, he will stand upon the earth. Oh, Job, even that foundation begins to crumble when Job finally unleashes his frustrations and contempt for the situation he is in. The "smite me, O mighty smiter" monologues that Job offers are something to behold. As our God's "come talk to me when you're the one that created the world" responses. Again, this was the theological processing and prose of an author making a point, not actual language spoken by God and recorded by someone listening. So what are we to make of this? In the story of Job, I recognize what is missing as much as what is there. I wonder how different the story of Job would be if someone had come along to sit with him and say, "I don't know why this happened. I don't know what you'll do next, but I know that I am here with you right now." The story of Job is strikingly lacking in empathy, a validating connection that says, "I see you, and I see what you're going through." An honest presence that doesn't try to fix things or try to tell you how to feel. Everything you're feeling is just relative. You know what Job really needed? And hear me out on this. What Job really needed was Dwayne the Donkey. I continue to be amazed at the connection so many of us have developed with Dwayne and his steadfast reassurance that we will see each other again soon. Every week, Dwayne shares his feelings, acknowledges the hard stuff, and then speaks a simple word of hope. We will see each other again soon. No timeline, no grandiose promises, no oversell, asking us to just do three easy steps to make everything better. No, just honesty, empathy, and hope. It's what Job needed. It's what we need. Since the book of Job was imagined to make a point, there's no reason we couldn't imagine a little ourselves. Imagine Job sitting in his despair when Dwayne comes along to sit with him. "I'm so sorry so many bad things happened, Mr. Job." You know, Mr. Job, it would be very easy to feel overwhelmed and sad and angry. I feel those things too sometimes. They're very real feelings. "You can tell me how you feel, Mr. Job. I will listen." "You know, you're stronger than you realize, and you're not alone." And then Job and Dwayne just sit there. What Dwayne is doing in that moment What Duane is doing for all of us every week is taking the hope he holds and tying it to the threads of life around us, that we might see it and know hope in our own lives. Even if not our own hope, that we might know his. Our hope can be nurtured and encouraged by the hope of others. Hope builds hope. When I go out to the garage to tie more hopes onto those strings, I find hope filling the empty space with the hope of others. Now, yes, reading them is heartwarming, but I don't have to read them to find hope. The fact that they exist is hopeful, because all hope is not lost. We are not alone. Knowing that people around me have reason to hope and that they would share that hope gives me hope. And so I extend you three different invitations. If you are without hope, I invite you to receive the empathetic presence of caring friends who will not judge, blame, or push you inappropriately. Let the existence of others with hope buoy you in a sea of despair. Now, if you are, by chance, overflowing with hope, unburdened by strife, then I invite you to find others to sit with. Enter the stories happening all around you with a presence that is far too often lacking. Don't be like Job's friends. Be like Duane. Though my guess is that most of us land somewhere in the middle. We're a mixture of both having hope and lacking hope. Whether we bounce back and forth between the two or carrying both at the same time full of mixed emotions, we are invited to name our places of need for others to hear, while also finding ways to tie our hopes on threads of life in ways that others can see them and take heart. For just like in the garage, there is a space that needs to be filled, and the ties that bind us as a community await your honest hopes. Our hope can be nurtured and encouraged by the hope of others. Our hope can be nurtured and encouraged by your hope, just as your hope can be nurtured and encouraged by ours. For hope builds hope.